This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Chris Ferrone of the Phoenix is here for a civil disobedience roundup. On tap, we have local protesters taking on the Keystone Pipeline. We also have members of Anonymous declaring war on the Department of Justice. And what's up with Occupy Boston now? Well, Chris is here to and been covering all of those events. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, we want an update. I think the best line from your piece about the recent protest at outside the Moakley Courthouse, which we'll get to in just 1 second, is that you really have to be passionate about the cause if you're outside in Arctic weather.
Even in protest happy Boston.
That's right. So let's talk about that. There were, as you describe it in your piece, very emotional protesters out in front of the Moakley Courthouse because they were unhappy with what they saw as an overreach from the Department of Justice on behalf of Aaron Swartz. Let me just say that Aaron Swartz committed suicide 2 weeks ago. So this is looking back for this group of friends and supporters. I want you to tell me who Aaron Swartz was, just bring people up to date on that, and then we can go forward to talk about what the protest was all about.
Yeah, Aaron Swartz, as was said, it wasn't just a protest, it was a rally. So friends, and he had a lot of Boston connections. Aaron Swartz was a prodigy, a science prodigy, if you will, of all sorts, also a very eloquent writer. I just recently learned, was also an editor at large for the Baffler magazine. Aaron, what he was most famous for was helping develop RSS, which essentially helps funnel the internet around. In helping develop Reddit, which a lot of people know as kind of a social media news aggregation hybrid.
A little bit of the Wild Wild West.
And that too.
Yeah.
But, really he was a thinker. And I think, most of all, and what you heard over and over is a fighter, someone who fought for, what he believed was the sort of democracy that should be practiced on the internet, freedom of information, essentially. And that's why the sentiment at this rally and in general and in countless op-eds that you've that have been forwarded around the internet, what we've seen is that's kind of the irony here. The federal prosecutor in Massachusetts, Carmen Ortiz, one of the things she wanted to do was actually take his computer away. And that's in addition to a fine and prison time. So, these were kind of some of the things that were unfathomable to him. And, this protest was 2 weeks to the day. So we saw a lot of, raw emotion as well as kind of these vignettes and examples of what he'd done.
So just so people understand, when you say freedom on the internet, he demonstrated that he was accused formally of downloading some journal articles, which are not open to the public, and then distributing them for free. He was author of something called the Guerrilla Open Access Manifesto, I guess, which is that all information, so I'll get it from wherever it is, and I'll share it with other people.
Right.
He was really quite active in the Stop Online Piracy Act, too, so people understand that.
And stopping SOPA.
Yes. Yeah, that's right, and stopping SOPA. So he was sometimes I think that when you hear about protesters and you hear about protesters out in the streets and in front of the Moakley Courthouse, and in this case wearing masks because it was anonymous, people have a certain image of who those folks are and who his supporters are. So I just want to note that one of his biggest supporters, Lawrence Lessig, well-known professor at Harvard, and his wife, in fact, Bettina Neuefein, was working with him to try to deal with these federal charges. And he was charged with violating a federal act. So there are many, as those protesters who are out in front, who are very upset, thinking he was overreaching. There are others who say Carmen Ortiz had nowhere else to go. This is the law, and she had to go forward with it.
Yeah, and I think we'll see what Aaron's like. Aaron's legacy is already immense. But as far as what's happening immediately, what's happening right now is there's a healthy debate going on. Aaron's law. So, one thing I should say is that while there were members of Anonymous, people who affiliate with Anonymous out there in masks, and while Anonymous has, did put forth this protest, there were a lot of people out there who did not, expressly said, "But you know, I'm not a member of Anonymous." And there are others who are members of Anonymous who said, you know, suggested that not everyone should come with masks because they are pushing legislation. They are pushing something called Aaron's Law, and I could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's the more serious side of this. Mm-hmm. This isn't just about going out there and having a memorial. They're really trying to turn this into a teaching moment.
And so tell us what Aaron's Law would do or why they're supporting it.
I think the easiest way to summarize it, you know, right now, much like a lot of other things that I cover, you know, the laws governing what Aaron Swartz actually did in downloading these files are archaic. We have the Computer Fraud Abuse Act and the Federal Wire Fraud Law. Aaron's Law, I think the most, personally speaking, or at least from my observations, what I see that the most important thing it would do it would make it so that the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act does not include, say, violating acceptable use policy, that 30-million-word thing that you sign up, that you check off when you go onto Google. That would not be a federal violation mm-hmm. under this. So basically, and there's been a huge debate about this already. You know, as soon as it's been proposed, there's a healthy debate about whether that would have actually helped Aaron's case. So, you know, nothing is open and shut. Not everybody agrees that this is the right solution. But when I say there's a healthy dialogue, I really mean it in this case. As I noted earlier, Swartz was one of the brains behind Reddit. And Reddit is where a lot of these kinds of conversations would take place in the already and where they're certainly happening right now.
I'm talking with Chris Ferrone. He's with the Phoenix, and he's been covering some winter protests. And we're taking a look at what are the causes that will drive people to the streets, even if the temperatures are frigid. What are they passionate about? One of them was a protest, a slash memorial out in front of the Moakley Courthouse in memory of Aaron Swartz. And that's what we're talking about now, who was a cyber pioneer, one who believed in open access to information and went about the business of gathering that, even if it was not open to the public, and spreading it around to the public. And for that, he was in violation of a federal law, though, as Chris has just said, there are many who say, given what the laws were and how antiquated they are, that another look should be had at those laws. So that's one that really has drawn a lot of people out. And there were 40 folks out there. This is, you know, that's a lot for frigid temperatures, and for, I think, a law that a lot of people didn't understand, because I think there's, to your point about all the discussion about it, was he in violation or not, is really being discussed by a spectrum of great minds.
It's central. And I should add that, you know, while there were 40 people out there, this is, you know, there were also protests in other cities, as well as kind of an ensuing campaign that took place the next morning and all over the weekend, in which Anonymous, as they often do, has declared war, quote unquote, on the Department of Justice.
Now, is this something that we will expect to see more of?
Well, they just a couple hours ago. So the first leg of the war, the so-called war, was they attacked the website for the U.S. Sentencing Commission with a denial of service attack, which essentially means it's often compared to imagine 10,000 people trying to get into a door at the same time. So the website slows down to the point of stopping. Earlier today, they also threatened to, say, release some dirty laundry regarding United States justices. Also, earlier today, they have something a little bit more fun, if you will, for them at least. They're hacking Justice Department-related websites with a cat spaceship, a Nyan Cat, the meme Nyan Cat spaceship that can blast up the site. So kind of an interactive hack for people at home to play with as well. And in all honesty, it's Anonymous. We don't know if tomorrow there will be something much greater or if it'll fizzle out. But I'll tell you one thing, judging from the number of people in the streets and the emotion out there and the dialogue, which is not going away anytime soon. I mean, don't forget all our major magazines, from your Vanity Fairs and to your Nations and such, haven't really even
waited yet.
Everybody's dipping. Mm-hmm. You know, these the publications that are, including the Phoenix, that are going to deliver longer, fact-based analyses of the situation, haven't even gotten in, are just getting in the pool. So I don't think it's going to go away. And as for the anonymous tactics, we'll see. But it's always interesting to watch. There's no doubt about that.
So let me just get your opinion about something, because as one who covers and has covered a lot of protests, you just described a variety of action that really takes place inside, you know, with people using their computers. And yet this group of people, plus others, thought it important to make a statement to go outside. How do you assess that?
I think, you know, the most when we talk about anonymous, it's all. Well, at least when you know, more mainstream media talks about anonymous, it's often about the things that they've done online, say hacking Sarah Palin's email, you know, more comical things like that, or their feuds with various white hat firms, security firms. But there have been a lot of instances in which anonymous has turned out in the street, or at least has facilitated others who turned out in the street. The first of which, in 2008. Was their war against Scientology, where literally thousands turned up in the street across – not just across the country but around the world. And that was organized almost overnight. And I'll also add that Anonymous absolutely had a major role in Occupy Wall Street from beginning through through the current time and in the Arab Spring and in other social justice movements worldwide. So it's no surprise that they could turn people out. And I think for something like Aaron Swartz, with whom many of them are sympathetic, we're going to see more of it.
All right. Let's move on to another protest that you've covered that I think a lot of people may not know about. You call it the Westboro 8 versus Trans Canada. Your piece is called Anatomy of a Peaceful Protest. And so first, we need to know who the Westboro 8 are, which I'm going to allow you to describe. But let's just set the scene in that this is a protest against the Keystone Pipeline. And so folks should just, you know, put their minds into what that is all about. And this is to stop the drilling that would happen there that would provide much more energy, potentially, as some say, the folks that are in support of it. But for the people like the folks who are the Westboro 8, it's going to, as a result of the drilling and the digging, poison the water. And then, most importantly, for environmentalists, accelerate climate change. So, you know, the temperatures are going to be all over the place.
Yeah. It's very complicated. I mean, basically, TransCanada is a multinational company that that builds oil pipelines and gas pipelines all up down across America. One pipeline that they're currently building that goes from Canada, I believe, Alberta area down to Texas is extremely controversial, and it's awaiting approval by the White House, by the executive branch, as well as the new Secretary of State, John Kerry.
John Kerry, right.
So you have people like the Westboro 8 are, and of course the friends that have worked with them, they are all college students, or one of them is a recent graduate, who decided to take an action in Massachusetts. A lot of the Keystone XL pipelines have happened in D.C. because that's where the legislators are, as well as, you know, all, you know, in Texas and in other places where digging and drilling and earth moving is taking place. So what they decided to do was chain themselves to each other, to one another, in kind of an old-fashioned sit-in, with some new twists, and they plan to do that at the Westboro office of TransCanada. I should note that the Westboro office of TransCanada not directly involved in building the Keystone XL pipeline. They have other projects. They actually have some different kinds of projects, not gas and oil projects in Massachusetts. Regardless, this was where they wanted to do it. There were other TransCanada actions happening in the first week of January. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple of these young activists reach out to me more than a month beforehand and ask if I'd like to kind of be embedded, which of course means, you know, that I'm not only am I not participating, I'm a total fly on the wall. Yeah. And if you read the article, you'll see, you know, I've been around a lot of protests in the past decade or so. I'm by no means a veteran of covering that scene, but I certainly have been at it a little bit longer than some of these young people. And I had to kind of sit there and watch them make mistakes. But that was the beauty of the article. I wound up writing it kind of like in Reservoir Dogs fashion, in which I open up with them, you know, entering the office with these giant thick bike chains around their necks, about to also glue themselves to one another with super glue. And then I kind of pull back a little and bring you to their first meeting when they had no idea even, you know, really about what the deal was. was and what kind of lawyers they would get or what kind of trouble they could get in or even what kind of change they were going to use.
They're very committed. And the thing that I thought was interesting about the piece, too, as has often happened in some of your pieces about Occupy, is to note when the experienced organizer drops in, this guy who calls himself Storm Chaser and tries to, you know, get themselves together and tell them about what they'll be facing and how to do it. But the super glue part, I have to say, is new for me. I hadn't heard that before.
They think it's new all around. Also myself, speaking with older activists and looking around the internet, it seems that the glue-in is a new tactic, so perhaps it will catch on. The Westboro 8, they did trend mildly on Twitter. It's just a lot of fun to write the article. And also, you know, the Phoenix is trying to do a lot more environmental coverage. And I should add that this it wasn't just an isolated protest. On Saturday, there was a huge protest in Portland, Maine, in regards to another pipeline. And on President's Day, there is the granddaddy of Keystone XL protests or, you know, climate change protests, more of a general climate change protest by the group 350.org in Washington, D.C. And I was at the most recent one down there, which is only about a month ago. And that was pretty massive. This really is going to be enormous. I have no doubt about it. About a year ago, activists with 350 and aligned with 350.org participated in the largest peaceful
demonstration
mm-hmm. or at least with the most arrests in decades. So
no, it's going to definitely because it's on the agenda for our new Secretary of State. Let me just say this: everybody was unfailingly polite, even if chained and glued, and the people who they were protesting in front of were also very polite, as were the police. Need to note that. And one last quick thing, if you would, just on February 2nd, Occupy not dead, coming out again to protest. Getting the TSA out of the MBTA.
I'm glad you brought it up. So, you know, it Occupy is and listen, I know this is all kind of wordy stuff, but everybody with these movements is very specific. You know, this is not specifically an Occupy protest, though they are promoting and advertising it through their websites and through the social media. You know, Occupy activists are. This is specifically. Just a group of citizens. And I can tell you who they come from. A lot of them, yes, were involved with Occupy, are involved with Occupy. Also, you have some people from the more Ron Paul libertarian contingent, some of whom were literally Ron Paul delegates at the Republican National Convention.
Not so interested in who this time, but I'm just interested in what they're doing so that people know really quickly that, you know, if their protest has to do with these what they're calling unwarranted searches.
So anyone who rides the MBTA, particularly the train, has probably seen tables just, you know, when you get to the train to get on where they ask to search your bags. And you know, this is a tactic that's actually, at my last check, has never been proven to produce a single, you know, terrorist or to spot anybody. It's seen as abusive by many parties, including the ACLU. And this group that's, you know, I guess loosely calling itself Defend the Fourth, as in the Fourth Amendment, to protect against search and seizure, will be out. They're going to be starting at noon on Saturday, which is Groundhog Day, which any writers out there, I'm sure we could get some really good metaphors and stuff out of that. And so it's really against the TSA, it's against the Department of Homeland Security and the transit police who conduct these searches, and it's going to be starting at noon and they're going to be starting all around the T. So Kenmore, Harvard, Ruggles, Leechmere, and South Station.
I think we're going to be hearing about that some more.
So
I just wanted to make sure we got that in toward the end. Thank you so much, Chris Ferrone of the Phoenix, who keeps his eye on the protests both outside and inside.
Anytime.
And Chris Ferrone is the author of 99 Nights with the 99%. Chris, thanks for being here.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Do you feel intimidated and not up to snuff when you eat out? Well, look at how the dining dynamics are changing with food writer Corby Kummer. I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. What's that like?